My name's Robert, and I'm a recovering adult child. Hi, everybody. So I thought, since some of us aren't here yet, even though we're in the room, maybe we could take a couple of deep breaths together. Wait. There's no performance reward here. Pardon? Yes. So maybe a deep breath in. Another. One more. Oh, it's a pleasure. I can't begin to tell you what an honor it is to just to be here. This is my first convention with ACA. And not only is it an honor to be here, but it's an honor to be with you. So I almost say this at every meeting I go to. This is like optional stuff. Can you guys hear me? Yeah, okay. And can you see this? Because I didn't realize that I got all black slides. I'm okay in the dark now. So I wanted to say a couple of things. If you know, good ACAs, we probably read the description of my presentation. You did? So when I read it again, I actually thought that I overused the word science. There's not going to be a lot of science in this. There is a slide on science, but it's not about science. You'll see. The other thing is that two things that I've put on that page are available to download, and I probably won't have time to cover them, but one is a meditation practice that I use, because I'm going to talk probably not a lot about it, but that's really been the key thing, one of the key things for me. And there's another one, Louise Hay. I don't know if you're familiar with Louise Hay. So Louise has been around for a long time, and it's called, it's a self-love affirmation. And so I give you those to do with as you wish. So the other thing is I have a lot of material. When I was accepted to do this, I realized that I was going to have to be clear and mindful in my speech for real, right? And so I have more material than the time, but I'm going to try to manage it to leave 15 minutes for questions. I was going to do an exercise, but I think I'd just keep it simple. So I'm just going to get started. The other thing I want to say is so I'm not a therapist. I don't have any kind of that stuff going on. As I was telling somebody before, my father, one of the things my father did to not have to be with my mother, literally, they had two beds like Ozzie and Harriet. Was it Ozzie and Harriet? No, it was Lucy. And he used to read a lot. He used to buy those Reader Digest books, and they had like multiple books inside of them. And he had a lot of those books, and they were buried in the basement. And as a child, I used to actually go through them. It's really weird. So I don't read books. I really don't. But I will get a book, and I'll keep it. Like my first Thich Nhat Hanh book, I carried it for a couple of years. Didn't even have to read it. and so I guess what I want to say is this is just my experience. So there may be things and, you know, the way I see things from my recovery that may be different. And the only reason I want to point that out is I'm also going to appeal to your adults. My material is really intended for your adult. If your child's involved, that's between you and your child. But your experience may be different. And hopefully my experience can be of some help to you. So unconditional self-love. I'm going to talk a lot about that. And I'm going to contrast it to emotional sobriety, if I dare. So let's get started. Here's kind of the highlights. Who am I? What is my big picture? In other words, what's my worldview of recovery? If I can say that, I just did. And here's the science thing, the science of trauma and PTSD. And then it's my journey, and it's condensed. And it's condensed. And then I want to do some stuff that really helped me. You know, I picked up the loving child, the loving parent, inner child metaphor, and I live my life by that. And without that metaphor, the trauma recovery that I have ain't going to happen. Because to me, trauma recovery is an adult deal. Requires an adult. It just requires an adult. So I'm going to talk about some things that really, really made a difference to me. A big, huge difference. And then Q&A. Does that make sense? Good. So who is this guy? You can't really see me, but I actually live now with the loving parent inner child metaphor. So my adult's responsible. I've already cleared this up with my guys. The adults here I present to you, they may have reactions to what we're doing and saying, but that's okay. We'll deal with that later. And they're safe and they're going to be okay. But when I go to my inner child, that's the picture I use. And I don't know if you guys use photos of yourself, but on my altar, I've got four or five of them. I actually will show you those. But anyway, so I am a recovering adult child. I'm 5 of 6 children. And I'm grateful because both of my parents were, you can come to my house, watch us eat dinner, and you would say, these guys have drinking problems, right? And I say that because there are people on the street that are our brothers and sisters that don't come here because there wasn't any alcohol in the family. So I'm grateful that they were drunks, seriously. So FOO is family of origin. So I'm garden variety guy, right? We had booze, we had money stuff. My father was doing things to my sister that were not okay. And I didn't find out about that until about 2 or 3 years ago when my youngest sister, who was being molested, she got a hearing aid and her memories came back. And I've forgiven my father, but I still am angry with him about this. Food, I mean, you know, when we have trauma, everything's kind of skewed. But abandonment and neglect. So I have a lot of friends, as you do, I'm sure, that they're, I do general stuff just to make points. I think there's hands-on neglect and abuse, and there's hands-off. So in other words, I have friends who, you know, their folks were on them physically. And mine wasn't. My mom was there and then she wasn't. So it was hands off. And it's interesting to compare how that plays out as an adult, but I won't go there right now. So I've been married 3 times, and the other thing I want to tell you is I was a mascot. So if I'm telling you jokes, I need to check in. Because I was about to tell you a joke. So, you know, you get on TV and they garble the voice and the face like when they have criminals. It's an interesting choice. So you could get my 3 ex-wives and do that. Have them on a panel. Maybe the third one. And, you know, I don't know which one's which and I don't know. And they could tell their stories. I couldn't pick them out. Didn't have a chance. I had no idea who I was. But I have 3 biological, 1 step, and 2 grandchildren. I'm 31 years sober. I'm almost 32. Thank God for that. Oh, my God. Right? Akron, Ohio. How did that happen? I'm a big metropolitan guy. I thought it would be in New York. But it wasn't. It was in Akron. So I've worked the steps in AA, SLA, OA. I did a little bit of WA because wife number 3 was tired of me going to meetings, so I didn't. And then the behavior started to come up at work big time. And so I went, I don't know if you've all been to a WA meeting. A Workaholics Anonymous. Right? Here's the thing. I had no idea. So I'm at this meeting. I haven't been to a meeting for a while, and I'm like out of my mind. This is all pre-read book. And then they're, you know, when you go to a meeting, it's Thursday at 7 o'clock at the church, right? Well, at these meetings, they actually had to check calendars to see if everybody was available. I'm serious. Wow. My first ACA meeting was in New York City in 1985. I was sober a year. And this stuff passed in front of me. I never forget it. And this is where I mention, it says adult children of alcoholics. And I thought, well, that's me. And then I went to my, I was such a sweetheart as a, I was a little kid. So I went to my sponsor. I waited a year, right? Because that's what you, right? You waited a year. I couldn't go to that because it was not a year. And I went to my sponsor and I was really nervous. And I have to be careful because, see, I keep yakking and I got a lot of material here. And I said, is it okay if I go to this meeting? I've always picked really kind, gentle sponsors, and I struggled with that because they're the other kind that I used to sit in meetings and the guy would say, yeah, he kicks my butt every day. And I thought, maybe I have the wrong sponsor, but I never really changed. And I went to him thinking, well, I went to him as a little kid saying, is it okay if I go to this meeting? And I never, and this has been my history, because I thought this was a big deal. He said, why don't you go and check it out? Never occurred to me. And this was, so I did, and there was no book. And the meetings were huge. And I think they had the laundry list. Well, they did have the laundry list. And I started talking about it because you wanted to hear it. It freaked me out. But anyway, that's neither here nor there at this point. But when things really changed for me is when the Red Book came out. Oh, my God. And I don't know if she's here, but the woman who introduced me to my first copy of the Red Book, and I had to sneak it into my house because my ex-wife, seriously, I met my ex-wife, number three, by the way, in SLAA, All Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. I was doing it all. And she was uncomfortable with, I was nervous to bring a book into the house that I was given by a woman. It laid in my car for a couple of weeks and got wet, and then I got pissed off. So I brought it in the house, and that changed my life. Anyway, I want to be careful here, because we're talking about Bill W. a lot and emotional sobriety. Where is Tony? Tony has changed my life. Tony A. I could stop right there. His steps have changed my life. It's all about self-love. I'll talk a little bit about that. Unconditional self-love. So the other thing I want to say is I want to be careful not to just assume that, but I was definitely a victim as a child, for real. You know, my innocence was stolen without my permission. And so there's the survivor, the victim, the survivor, and I've spent a lot of time surviving. But then there's this phase called thriving, and I think one of the workshops is going to talk about this. So I remember what used to always upset me, I'd be in an AA meeting, and if we weren't talking about gratitude, we were talking about happiness, joy, and freedom. And I used to get really upset when we talked about that. Gratitude I could deal with, but that still pissed me off. But the happiness, joyous, and free, there's a conversation about those three things is not the same as the experience of those three things. And I have that experience in my life today. And it's this fellowship that has done that for me. And so I'm already probably behind time. And that's my first slide, for crying out loud. So I want to talk about this real quick. This is who I am. These are the guys that I parent on a moment-by-moment basis. And I highlight, so that's my dad, and I have no memory of my father touching me. But there it is, he's touching me. And look at the look on my face. It's like, oh my God, I'm in heaven. Died and got, he's pretty checked out if you look. He's kind of staring off into space. But so that's the one I want to talk about, because I call these Bobby and the boys. So we love each other. We really do. We send cards to each other on our birthdays. We give ourselves Valentine's. I'm serious. And so I talk to him, and he represents all of these guys. But you can start to see, this is the guy where you can start to see the trauma in his face. Kind of lost. So I spend a lot of time. These are all on my altar. I don't know. I was Episcopalian as a young boy, but I don't know what I am now. I have a guy, Ganesh Hanuman, Thich Nhat Hanh, they're just all deities, and I, you know, they're part of my life. But I talk to these guys, and I'll talk more about that. Here's the thing. I wasn't sure to put this slide in. I want to give you a couple of definitions so that I can go quickly. And these may be real definitions in life, like, you know, like they mean something specific. But these came through while I worked on myself. A trauma map. I documented my trauma because it showed up one day and I let it show up. And I'll talk a little bit about that. And then I spent 2 or 3 years putting it on a piece of paper. And then I went to EMDR and, oh my God. So you'll see that. It's a graphical representation of my childhood trauma. Trauma signature. So here's the thing. I think we're all, yeah, I would be careful. So those of us who are traumatized, I think that we could be brothers and sisters. We have different, our content is different. So if there's food on the table, I may just see it as food. You may not. You may have a traumatic reaction to that food, right? My thing is money, apparently. I had the big long list. I decided to edit what I was going to say. And so our signatures are different, but we all have a trauma signature. So if I step 1 degree back from the content of the trauma, we could have been in the same family. Although you might have been a hands-on person, I might have been a hands-off, being traumatized. Healthy parenting. This is my definition, and one of the gifts of doing this workshop is that it became clear to me, seriously, that I loved myself unconditionally. And to me, that's full-time, moment-to-moment parenting. Full-time, moment-to-moment. And when I first grabbed this loving parent thing, first of all, those are two of my worst words before the Red Book. Loving, that was not my favorite word. I had no idea what it was. And parents, it's like, right? So neck up recovery, you know, la, 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 reporting, discovering. To me, neck down recovery is where trauma exists, and that's where it gets healed. So I had to descend into my heart, and I'll talk a little bit about that. EMDR, I didn't have enough room, so I spent a long time at HP when it was really a cool place to be. And I was trained on slides, and so you don't want to really wrap around a slide. And so when I put EMDR in parentheses, it wrapped around. So I took it out. So I don't know, how many are familiar with EMDR? Cool. How about somatic experience? Okay, I'll definitely talk about that. These are treatment modalities for trauma, which I used. All right, so here's my big picture. So here's the thing about trauma. It's a double-edged sword, right? Because I was traumatized, and I've forgiven my parents. Doesn't mean that my wound is gone. The wound and forgiveness are separate. So if I forgive my parents, and I didn't plan on forgiving my parents, one was EMDR and one was sitting on my father's grave. After I got done screaming at him, I forgave him. So the one side of the coin is, I'll be careful, it sucks because I have this wound and it hurts for real once I decide to look at it. But the other side of it is, it explains everything. It explains everything. So I don't know, and what I mean by that, being traumatized to me is, a better example is shell-shocked. That's what they used to call it, shell-shocked. And you remember in the movies, if a guy was shell-shocked, because you couldn't see him being shell-shocked, so he would shell-shock himself, right? I like that metaphor. Because I'm traumatized whether I'm being triggered or I have an issue with trigger. I probably shouldn't get into this. I don't like the word trigger. I don't think it's helpful. I think it's helpful at phase one. See, that's the other thing I want to say, is we start out real simple, and then we get better, and then we get better and better. So I have to be mindful of acknowledging that. But to me, if I'm, and I actually shouldn't talk about it here because I have a slide about it. So the thing that really struck me about it was when I picked up the red book, I'll come back to that. I have a tendency to just go. So here's my view of my recovery. And there's nothing radical here, but you know, you've got what I would consider to be the program, steps, sponsorship, you know, witnessing someone's recovery. I'm not a fellow traveler fan. I'm a witness. So I've got the steps, I've got service, telling the truth, the laundry list, and the true self. You know, I have another issue here. My actual parent is me, not my higher power. Because my actual parent washes the dishes. My higher power doesn't. Actually, my higher power is a woman, and I call her a divine mother, which is awesome because I spent two decades maligning my mother at meetings. Because that's the parent that I was in combat with, even though we weren't even physically or emotionally connected. So I've got the true self to me, which is my loving parent, my inner children, and my higher power, divine mother. And my true self speaks. Anyway, I'll come back to that. And then down here, this is really the trauma area where I've got shame and abandonment. And I promise there will be a little science here, a PTSD science. And then what I've got here is this is my life, where it shows up. Money issues, romance issues, work, sex, food, love. And for me, sex, love, and romance are three different things. And all of these things create chemistry, right? There's chemistry there. And I mean that literally, that my mood changes when I get involved with living. And then, so I've got trauma work. So I'm going to focus on this, although I will refer up. So here's the other thing I talked about. This is the descent into the work. I talk about, and here's a recovering human. So there's this neck up recovery, right? And then there's the neck down recovery. This is very scientific. But I spent a lot of time neck up, decades in recovery. And some of my most exquisite suffering was happening while I was working the program. Oh my God. Okay, so it's, you know, and here are the attributes. You know, it's discovery, like those aha moments. Aha moments no longer serve me much utility. There's not much utility to them, but they're helpful. And I have these concepts and beliefs, and, you know, so I can sit in a meeting and talk about what happened to me as if it's this 11 o'clock news. Let's go to the videotape. Other people start crying, and I'm saying, like, what's up with that? And then there's these other things called substitute thinking. And I'm going to talk about this. I hope it's well-received. Substitute thinking, substitute behaviors, and talk therapy. So in other words, I come in and I'm hurting myself. So then I say, when I start to feel, it's like, that actually hurts. So maybe I'll not do that. Let me try not hurting myself. So I'm substituting this, right? And that's better than hurting myself, right? It is. And then there's the neck down stuff, where to me, this is where the recovery occurs. And it's emotional, and it's feeling, and I'm going to get a little toony on you. This is the true nature of my abandonment. If I'm willing to look deeply on an ongoing basis, my trauma signature becomes clear to me. And that's very different than what we're talking about. And so down here we're talking about, dare I say it, these behaviors and thinkings, they actually go away. I don't have to substitute anymore. I'm on a sustained path of healing, if that makes sense. And here's trauma work and unexpressed grief. Those two things are slightly different. Here's the other thing I will tell you. I have no proof of any of this, by the way, except my experience, is I think that my higher power, Divine Mother, wants me to get well. And that if I get that, and I don't mean neck up get that, if I get that down below, which means I love myself no matter what happens, that my trauma will naturally pass through me. It will pass through me. And these triggers, it's a reminder that I'm not there. But I don't think I get triggered so that I'll be upset and re-traumatized. I'm being triggered because my higher power is nudging me to heal. And I'll tell you what, when I got that, it changed everything. Okay, I don't know, I hope that made sense. Oh, and then my example is PTSD. So when I read the, so I'm the kind of guy that had, yeah, remember, both parents are drunks. It's like, well, this certainly applies to me. So I read the book and it's like, whatever you say. And it talks about post-traumatic stress. I wondered about it because I had a guy in my meetings that thought that we weren't real post-traumatic stress, that military people were. God bless them. So I have it, right? But I'll tell you what, reading about it in the Red Book and having a legitimate, in-the-moment, traumatic reaction to the here and now with no evidence of, that's a different thing. And that to me is the difference. Does that make sense? Good. All right, so here's a little controversy. This is my experience with multiple fellowships, because I think that, so with a loving parent, this can be sorted out. And the only reason I'm bringing this up, I should have asked this up front. How many of you have a loving parent? And it's okay if you don't, because, pardon? You can have two? Oh yeah, you can have as many as you want. I do one with multiple kids, but that's me. How many want one? I mean, I think the whole, yeah, okay. So this is an adult conversation, please. But again, it's just my experience. So we talk about emotional recovery here. And so what I've got here is I have sustained recovery. So you know the difference between sustained and unsustained recovery is that I'm substituting my thinking and behavior on Tuesday, right? Because I was going to hurt myself, and then I substituted a loving act. And on Wednesday and Thursday, I kind of hurt myself again. And then on Friday, it's like, oh, where did he go, that loving parent? So to me, sustained recovery means that I don't have to substitute anymore. I just act out of love for self and others. That's the other thing, is loving you without loving me is not going to happen. Loving you after loving me, it comes with it. It's effortless. Takes no energy. So on the graph here, we've got sustained recovery, and higher is better, at least for me. And again, this is my view of life. Low sustainability, high sustainability. So here we have 1939. God bless Bill and Dr. Bob. Oh, my God. Right? Yeah, exactly. We've got NA, AA, NA, and OA, and I've got the yellow are the years they started. And then to me, this is where the emotional sobriety was introduced as a concept, right? How many times in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous does the phrase emotional sobriety show up? Once. And Bill's letter was like, he was out there. But here's my, again, this is my experience. So I'm not drinking, which is a very good thing, but I'm reenacting every other thing I've got going on. I got food stuff going on. I got money stuff going on. Relationships. I'm in a multi-decade marriage. No connection. Well, there's no connection to me, so I can't connect with you if I can't connect with me. I can try to connect with you and hope that doesn't work. Anyway, so I've got this emotional sobriety stuff going on. In 1958 is when he wrote the letter. So then you go up a notch. Now, the other thing is I've never been in an Al-Anon meeting, and just need to say that, because I may have put Al-Anon in the wrong spot. And if I did, I'm happy to move it. But so now we graduate up. CODA is where my reference is. CODA is very, to me, again, this is me, CODA is ACA light. It refers back. It acknowledges trauma. And that's it. I shouldn't say it like that. It's more than that. But to me, what I learned there was substitution. So we talk about victories, and I tell you that instead of doing, well, to me, it's instead of hurting myself, I didn't. I love myself. And I may go back and hurt myself again, but then I'll come back and tell you that I didn't hurt myself. So Is that better than reenactment? All day long. All day long. Now Tony shows up. I got to tell you, I think Tony got it right. And I won't say anything else. So we're different because we're talking about trauma and PTSD. Not only that, we're no longer anecdotal. And again, this is just me. The AA Big Book saved my life from drinking, and it's mostly anecdotes. Nothing wrong with that. Our stuff is rooted in science. I'm getting to the science thing pretty quick. So, in other words, being traumatized is a scientific phenomenon, and you can measure it. We're not making this up. My neurology is different because I was brought up in this family, right? I was a legitimate victim. So, to me, you've got the trauma thing going on. In 1978 was when Tony started this. The Big Red Book started in 2006, and then Tony Steps came out in 1991. And for reasons that I don't know and I really want to find out, that fell flat on the floor. I don't know, are you guys familiar with Tony's recording? Oh, wow. Tony, in 1991, presented the ACA, his ACA 12 steps to a gathering somewhere in Florida, and it's recorded. I highly recommend you hear him. And it used to be on the website. That's another mystery that I'll just tell you. It used to be on the WSO website. It's gone. Here's where you can get it. FTACA.org. Fellow Traveler ACA. But it's not Fellow Traveler, it's FTACA. And it's got all kinds of good stuff on it. So to me, what happened here is I'm no longer substituting. There's nothing wrong with substitution because imperfect self-love, you got to substitute a lot. Parenting is hard. But what happened to me is I went from substitution into real transformation. And to me, unconditional self-love is what it is. And again, I want to be very careful out of respect. Emotional sobriety, I get what it is. But it's ambiguous to me. I can't measure it. If I asked for a definition, we would probably give unique definitions to everybody. To me, unconditional, so if I can't do that, then how do I achieve it? So to me, unconditional self-love is what Tony's talking about. And I can measure that in my own life. And I can observe it in others. So this is a big deal to me. Unconditional self-love from an ACA recovery perspective is all. There's nothing else more important. There's nothing else more important. Does this make sense? All right, here's the science. And this is my definition, and the graphics are from Olivia, who's my sweetheart partner. I've never said that in public. And since this is being recorded, she's probably going to hear that. This is Hobbs and I never heard of them. She said, so she gave me these. Yeah. So to me, and this is my own definition, so take it with a grain of salt. A traumatic reaction is an exaggerated internal, in me, my stuff happens right here, reliably, feeling in the absence of in the here and now of tangible evidence of a legitimate threat of my safety and or well-being. In fact, typically, all evidence is to the contrary. No threat exists. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay, good. So we're brothers and sisters. And I love these pictures. So a little bit more. So here's the science. Voila. And I need to acknowledge Elizabeth Dennison? Elizabeth Dennison is apparently a trauma therapist somewhere. I went to her website to get this, and she's got all kinds of good stuff. So again, Elizabeth Dennison. And it's copyrighted, that's why I need to acknowledge her. So there's three levels here. One is the live stream, and I'm going to actually read it because I like the word. This is the guy on top is normal heavy flow of activation and relaxation over time. It's kind of like, for mathematicians, which I used to be, it's kind of like a sine wave. But life is definitely good up there, right? So the middle guy is a single traumatic event, one event. And I say that as opposed to us, or those of us who consider themselves traumatized, chronic. You could have parallel events going on 24/7, right? So one event will actually, as a former mathematician, it perturbs the system, right? And it's just wacky. And this is one. And this is not, you know, like it happened at 7 o'clock, and this is the reading at 7 o'clock. And then at 7:01, it was upstairs. Mm-mm. It now functions this way. And the cool part is that, and I love her words. So I'll read that. Trauma ruptures boundaries, causing activation spikes, shutdown, disassociation, and depletion. Seriously. We know that, right? Those are some of my favorite things I did during my... But here's the cool part. It can be healed. The amount of money... So I'm in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. The amount of money that's being sunk into PTSD research is unbelievable. I tried to get into the university, into Stanford's compassionate, caring, loving, whatever those guys are. They did a video, and I wanted to meet them. And I wanted to get connected to this science. Not, I don't want to get smart about it. I just want to talk about it because we're not making this up, right? It's like, get over it. Yeah, okay. You know, get over it. But anyway, she talks about the mending zone, the nervous system requieting, what does it say? Well, pretty much. So I won't go there. I'll just read this. Yeah, thank you. Boundary repair, functional mainstream, or is it mainstream? Or anyway, it can be healed. I mean, you're not going back to the original sine wave, but you're this is what I like. She talks about metabolizing chunks of trauma. Actually metabolizing them. And I'll talk a lot about that. Well, not a lot, but I'll talk about it. So the point of this slide is, and I already talked about it, this depicts a single event, and yet we are often subjected to chronic events moment by moment, hour by hour, day by day. Tens of thousands of hours being traumatized. You know, a non-reality is my reality. So this is where the frozen feelings, swallowed despair. Oh, it wasn't that long ago, right? You know, they get, and I have more on this, thinking. So the thing about it is that it leaks into everything. So my thinking is affected by it. So I'm this little kid, right? And I'm trying to figure out how this world works. And I make decisions. And they're completely skewed. They make no sense. Beliefs are laced with it. And my non-reality is my reality. So it's no wonder when I grow up, it's like, I have no idea. But the thing I wanted to stress about this is we are not making this up. You're welcome. And we don't have to defend it to anybody. Not only that, it's the laundry list. All of a sudden, it's like, makes perfect sense. My behavior over the last 4 or 5 decades makes perfect sense. We can't act any other way or behave and think any other way. So here's the anatomy of a trauma reaction. I really love this guy up in the corner there. And so I have an event, and I want to do this to kind of build on it. And I better check time because I'm okay a little bit. I need to go fast. So we've got an event, and I have that traumatic reaction, right? It's like, it's right here. And it comes up in feelings, and my favorites, the first ones I let out of the bag, were terror, panic, and desperation. And they used to come in clusters. Not just one, they came in clusters. Or my hands will start sweating. I'll get dizzy. I used to get stupid. I would get stupidly confused in the moment. So you can identify? So if I do one of these, that's kind of what it looks like. But what happens is I swallow it over and over. I swallow it over and over. I swallow it over and over. As a matter of fact, whenever I get into a traumatic event, I would swallow multiple times to get to the end where I was the problem. I would connect the catastrophic dots on purpose because I don't want to have to take each one at a time. Let's just go to the end and get this over with. And I was doing that my whole life. So what happens then to me is I've got beliefs, messages, decisions, and agreements where I've got, it's just, when I first got into this fellowship, I thought, oh my God, when I did the laundry list, I would tell you everything, and then it all came up. And it just takes too long to tell you, like, you know, 45 minutes of what happened to me. It's, oops, I guess I'm done. Did I do something here? So everything's wiggy. I have a friend who used the word wonky once, and I thought, I like that word. I'm just wonky, emotionally wonky. But then what happens is dissociation sets in. And so, you know, I think the way the body works, and again, this is all just, I think, is, you know, if a bus almost hits me, my body will actually protect me. But, and I would actually dissociate in the moment, I think. And then I go to a group and we do a bus hitting therapy thing and then I'm okay. With us, it's like moment by moment by moment by moment by moment by moment. That's why I really like the shell shock. Because that's what it is. And since I have no slides, I want to get off on this. I'll tell you why I don't like the word triggers. I think it was a helpful thing, but it focuses too much on the event. So I have friends that say, oh, I can't go there, I'll get triggered. I don't want to live that way, I'm sorry. So to me, I don't really want to get triggered, but triggers are very helpful because they point me to what I need to work on. Now, I will tell you that I can't do that without a I can't. You might be able to. Without a loving parent, I can't do that. I'm not capable of discerning unless I have an adult. Does that make sense? And let me just keep going. Oh, it touches me. It touches my history. The other thing is that I think there's a belief that if I'm not being triggered, so I'm kind of in the here and now and I'm kind of a happy camper, that my trauma doesn't exist. It's always there. That's why I think it really is so debilitating on our beings. You know, they talk about in the Red Book a little bit. We get all these diseases and, right? On the slide? I have no idea. Sweaty hands. Dizzy. This looks like the first Windows demo. The blue screen. And somehow that was a feature. Oh, absolutely. Sure. So I think what I'm going to, because I think I know what's next, is what I know, my trauma map is next. I want to show you my trauma map. I really do. And I'll tell you before that comes back is, that's a serenity prayer. Maybe we should just do that and call it a day, right? Right? So, I don't know why it's not. Yay! Whoa. All right, so that's my definition again, but now I'm introducing a couple of new concepts. It's in the book. It's so beautiful. The solution is to become my own loving parent, right? Now, again, I'm going to take a little bit of liberty here. I think that is the most awesome chapter in my... That concept is the most awesome concept in my entire life. And yet, it's up to me to learn how to do it. And the book could have a little more guidance there. But All right, so the solution to become your own loving parent. Healing and transforming trauma requires a loving parent all the way through at every step. Kids don't want to go to an EMDR session, a therapy session. Why would they want to do that? So the adult has to take them. So here's my journey. Here, hit the highlights. And let me take the time here. This started out as three highlights. And I was waking up in the middle of the night. So this is a six or seven year period. And I think I'm going to just read them. This may not be helpful. My trauma showed up one day when a bank statement came. I had separated from my ex-wife, number three. I recreated my family three times. The third time was really spot on. My mom, my dad would make the money. He would give it to my mother. She would do the books. And then she had total control over the, you know, it's like there's not enough money. And so I separated, moved out. My TV wasn't plugged in yet, and it was a Saturday, and nobody was around, no family, because I spent two decades ignoring this, doing family stuff, even though I wasn't very present for it. But I got the bank statement, and I freaked out. I had a panic attack, and I had enough consciousness to be able to say, this doesn't make any sense. I shouldn't say, I wasn't very calm about it. I was freaking out. It's like, why can't I open this bank statement? I felt incapable. I was paralyzed. And there's not enough money. And I have a good sponsor, by the way. And I called him and spent an hour talking about this. And I was so, the amount of energy that it had in my body, it scared me. But then I thought, oh, I think this is PTSD. So I went from the book neck up awareness to actually descending into it in my body. And I'm a meditator, and I've been a meditator a long time, and I use meditation to spend time with my trauma every day. And again, I want to just say this. How long it takes you is up to you. I meditate at least an hour a day. I've been doing it for a long, long time. And being single helps. It does. And when I described it to people that know about stuff like meditation, they said that it's not sure you're meditating. Because what I do is and by the way, what I'm telling you is on one of the things I've posted. I check in with my kids every morning. That's my meditation. Consciously breathing. And I've been doing it for a decade. And one time, because I get to the, I breathe and I do all this whatever. And then I say, how are you guys? Are you guys okay? And then, you know, there's the five or six guys. One time in 10 years, they were okay. And I'll tell you what happened. I probably shouldn't because I'm just off script. Is my ex-wife number three was in Ayurveda stuff. And I got a brochure at this temple that you could mail money that had a menu of healings. And one was, I think, a puja. See, I don't even remember it right. It was $100, and it said, if you do this, you get this. So I did that. I sent $100, and it went to India, and I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter. That morning after, I woke up, and it was like a pristine lake. It was like, and I thought, wow, this is where I would have sworn, and I'm glad I didn't. I was stunned by it. I didn't know what to do, because we're like, we're not okay, and now we're okay. How do we get okay? So that was the one experience. So my trauma shows up. I'm just going to have to read these, because I want to show you the stuff that made the difference. So I made a loving parent thing. I thought, what do I got to lose? Right? I know nothing about it. It says right in the book, that's the solution. I'll try that. I made a public declaration at meeting level for months that I have a commitment to love myself. I said, I just want you guys to know this. I'm making this commitment in public. Now, I got to tell you, my kids were not happy about this. It's like, why are you doing this? You know we can't do this. You know, all that stuff. So I did it anyway. That was very helpful. And this meditation thing I want to tell you is priceless. And I'll give you an example real quick. I didn't know how to parent, so I went to the park. And I watched parents. And I was in Whole Foods one day. This is God stuff. I'm in Whole Foods, and I stop, and there is a mother-son-daughter configuration with a cart. Daughter is standing, mother is standing, kids sitting facing mom, freaking out. And this was 5 feet from me. And he was not okay. And I got that, right? I knew that, right? And she said nothing to him. She stared at him. He was like, and they're locked in eye contact. He's doing this and doing that, and she's, you know, she's kind of pacing it and pacing it and pacing. She's loving him, right? This went on for a couple, I think it probably went on for like 2 minutes. It felt like yeah. He just went on and on and on, and his volume went quieter, 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 quieter. And he was, and then he would like start up again and down again. And at one point, he just stopped. And she kind of nodded. He nodded and smiled, and she took off. That's what I do in meditation. So I'm real good at, you know, like having a conversation. I cut my eye teeth on one of my bosses for authority figures. So I just had to think of him, and it was like I get all this chemistry, right? And then I'd go see him, and we'd have this conversation, and, you know, my adult would dutifully, thank you for sharing that. Okay, I'll go do that, sure. And I'm freaking out. So I'd recreate that in the next day. I'd recreate it, and boom, there it is. There's the feeling. So then I would just do what the mom did. I learned this from Thich Nhat Hanh, by the way. God bless him. He's still alive. I would hold it and love it. And I could go into a lot of detail. The first time I did that, I thought I was going to die. So then I started to see that thinking I was going to die because I was going to feel feelings, that's a childish view of life, right? Makes perfect sense. So I do that all the time, and I highly recommend that. Highly recommend it. Because that's where I metabolize the chunks of my trauma, like the slide said. So mindful speech, so when I gave my kids permission, because, yeah, hey, guys, you can talk now. And you can feel. And you might learn to trust me, but you're welcome to. So they wanted to get in your grill, because they didn't like you, right? And I said, well, this is pretty hard. That's the other thing, is when I started to parent myself, I thought, well, they can hear me. Right? Like, they can hear me. So I'm trying to have a conversation with my higher power, and it's like, but they can hear me. And so I have a great sponsor. He said, yeah, they can hear you, but they will watch what you do. I said, well, what does that mean? He said, consistency. Yeah, exactly. So when I make a mistake, so the other thing is my kids have nothing to do with my behavior. They're not involved. So when I make a mistake, they used to get really upset because thought they were going to ask to be leave. You know, I'm going to ask you to, you know, I'm going to have to ask you guys to leave. I said, no, you're not involved. I made the mistake. Your job is to let go. That's your job. I've been doing that job for like 2 years. They have no idea. I shouldn't say that. They're learning to let go. So what I said to them is, they said, well, how come we can't get in that person's face? And I just, at first I said, this is not a good idea. But that's not a real answer to a kid, right? So they keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And I was frustrated and I was praying. And one day just came out. That's the other thing. I think each of us has the capacity to love ourselves unconditionally. It will come out. You know, you watch movies. I used to get love from watching movies and hoping for the best. But we have that love. It's amazing. So we were doing it again, and they said, well, how come? And I said, I'm not going to speak through your feelings because that was what was done to us. I get a goosebump saying it again. They went, oh, I guess we won't be doing that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so mindful speech. So I was doing the yellow book. So And again, I want to be careful because now people do groups of steps, and you know, some people get upset. We're not going fast enough, or we're going too slow. I didn't have a group, and I'm grateful because it took me 18 months to get through the steps. First step. And because of that, I went from the neck up to the neck down. And I didn't plan on taking that long. That's just what happened. Anyway, so the messages step. Do you remember the exercise in step one called family messages? When I saw that, most of the steps was, that's neck up stuff. Oh, yeah, here they are. I filled it up. I actually had to get another copy of a blank, and I had four passes at that. Called my sister after the first one, and she got very upset. That was me. See, we do get better. Anyway, so that's when I knew. So I'm meditating, doing this lovey-lovey thing, right? At first it was hard, but I started to see myself get better. I could see it. I could feel it. Couldn't explain it to you except I was getting better. And then I hit a wall. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't go any deeper. And so I said, I think I need help. So I went and got an EMDR therapist. And I went in hindsight, it's kind of funny. I took the trauma mat. Did I show you my trauma mat? You did? Oh, I did it again. Here it is. This took me 3 years. One feeling at a time. You can look at it later. It's all up there. But it's mine. It's mine. And I love the white rage that was underneath all. Not just rage. This is white rage. But the thing I want to point out is that it's everywhere. My relationship with money, food, all that stuff. So there you saw it. I took that into my EMDR lady and said, I know what I need to work on. I got these messages every time something happens. Like at the dinner table. My thing was at the dinner table. Anyway, so I got professional help. Recovering emotional childhood, I want to talk about that. I need to be very mindful of time. Yeah, I'm like 4 minutes away. Holy gamoly. So I'm going to just, that's my trauma map. Wouldn't trade it for anything. And by the way, when I, in recovery, I was rarely willing to own that I got better. But I'm going to own it. I haven't updated this since 2013. Because I've walked the entire landscape. I'm done with that. This is what it looks like in my stomach. It's what it used to look like. I went on a retreat by myself. I highly recommend it. I take a week and I go to a spiritual place by myself. And I love myself. It's pretty cool. And I was nauseous most of the time. At first I thought, I think I have like problems. It became very clear to me that it was a sign of release. So here's the thing, this is my signature. So I have messages in each one of these areas. So I actually started writing my money stuff. I had like 4 pages of what my mother used to say about money. And then I had food stuff. And they're all connected to the events. But what started to happen is as I started to work, the messages had feelings. So when I would feel, the interesting thing, it's really a shame that I'm out of time. I used self-harming messages to calm myself. So I'd freak out and I go, oh yeah, I'm a bad boy. That's what it is. I'm glad I figured that out. I mean, it's funny, but it's not. I'm actually getting some body sensations as I tell you that. So what happened is I started to notice that you could condense these because they're pretty much the same thing, just in different. And what I'm left with is the messages were lifted from me. They were lifted. And I thought, I am home free. The messages are gone. Well, what I was left with was the raw trauma. Now, at first I thought this was what's the opposite of a bonus? It wasn't a bonus, it was the... it sucked, right? but I can work with this. A loving parent. So a loving parent, it's like, sweetheart, and I want to show you. So I condensed like that fight. This is my childhood. I felt unloved, unwanted, untouched, unheard, and unseen. You know, we talk about I was invisible. I wasn't invisible. They didn't see me. It's not on me, it's on them. Yeah? I have 15 minutes?
Yeah, originally it was going to go to 9:30, and you've got 10 extra minutes.
Perfect. This guy? Oh, I'm glad you... Yeah, so this is, folks, as Tony says, and I'm a Tony fan, this is the true nature of my abandonment. I know exactly what happened to me. Now, the thing is that I became a drunk too and did it to my kids, so I no longer hold my mom accountable. She had no way of showing up for me. And she wanted to. I have home movies. We now call them videos. I have a home movie of my mother. I'm getting goosebumps telling you this. Because I had such contempt for her. Contempt was my favorite friend. You can't take it away from me. I can turn it up. I can go months with it. I can, you know. And so I watch these videos, and I'm 3 or 4, and she is always next to me. She's like right there. So it's like, holy shit. Oh, holy gamoly. She was right there. I needed to see that. And then she wasn't. And she never came back. She couldn't. I had to explain this to my kids, my inner kids. Because he thought, ooh. I said, she couldn't. Even if she wanted to. And she did want to. And so my mom was this, I used to really get off on my contempt. I wake up in the morning and she's on the wall. That's why I adopted a female higher power. Because my sponsor said to me once, she wants you to get well. I lost it. You can see it in the movies. And so clarity and discernment are, it's real. I mean, it's like the double-edged sword. Now I see exactly what happened. And now what do I, how can I release, the stuff that's buried with that knowledge? But here's the other thing that for me is, this is it in a nutshell. Whenever I have a traumatic reaction, I'm being called to parent in the moment. I didn't know that at first because I thought, how do you do that? Like, what is a loving parent anyway? But I'll tell you, it came to me. And I'm going to say something really kind of radical. And it's on another slide, but I'm going to say it here. Is when I read Bill W.'s letter on emotional sobriety, I'm struck by his assessment. And his assessment was he needed to detach from everything, including the fellowship. So here's the thing. When I'm substituting and I have a traumatic reaction, I'll probably call you, or I'll work a step, or I'll go to a meeting. Well, there's another level to this. If I have a traumatic reaction, and this makes perfect sense to me now, I don't do any of those things. As a matter of fact, those aren't helpful. I got to take care of my kids. I just got this in the last 3 or 4 months because I was doing it and I didn't realize it. And this is kind of radical because the book is laced with reliance on fellow travelers working this. And there's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. But I'm telling you, this is, for me, this is it. And above all else, this is what Tony talks about. It really is. So whenever I have a traumatic reaction, the first thing I got to do, because if I call you, there's nothing wrong with you, but can you imagine the kid? It's like, I'm hurting and you're calling her. What's going on here? This is familiar, right? Now, how complicated is this, right? But to me, asking us to parent ourselves is like giving a 3-year-old a medical book on brain surgery and say, Thursday, you're it. And you know us, we would be like, oh my God, oh my God. that kids shouldn't be doing brain surgery. And it's my parents' job to take that away from him. It's like, you're not involved. My kid's not involved with the decisions I make. He's not an adult. My sponsor cleared it up for me. He said, you have $100,000 to invest. And what would you do? Well, I'd get people that know investment. He said, well, you invite your three-year-old? My three-year-old was not happy to hear this, by the way, because he thought he would definitely should be there. Because there's not enough. And I just want you to know there's not enough, right? All right, so this is stuff that really hit home for me. And I'm going to cover it pretty quickly. Loving parent evolution. Again, the loving parent. I can't heal trauma without a loving parent. It's an adult process. It requires an adult to supervise moment by moment, event by event, because we've got to go places and do things that kids don't want to do. And I've talked about most of this. But I do make a distinction between a critical parent, which we all love. You know, the book says shake hands with them. I told them to get the F out of town. Unless you have evidence to support the claims you're making to this little kid, then you got to go through me. Changed my life. So, and plus, it is the solution. It says it right in the book. And my kids love that. It's in the book. They can get around that. They can get behind that. This is another thing, amends to self. And I don't want to spend a lot of time because I want to cover the other one in depth. Tony, you notice Tony doesn't hit, well, for those of you who are, how many are not familiar with Tony's steps? Oh my gosh. Oh, okay. I recommend it.
Is that the yellow book?
No.
Okay,
there we go. No. Yeah, he did. And it's curious to me, again, I'm going to get a little off on the sidebar here. Where's Tony? You remember, where's Waldo? Like, where's Tony? Seriously, I'm dead serious. When we just came out with this new book, we've got now 4 laundry lists. I'm sure it's good stuff. I was expecting some Tony stuff. That's just me. But I am going to look into that myself. Anyway, so Tony does not have an amend step. Gone. Sanity and insanity concepts. Gone. Character defects, shortcomings, gone. I tell you, I think he got it right. His steps to me, all 12 of them, are about unconditional self-love. Yeah, please do. In the Bay Area, they're starting to read his steps. And it's going to be an interesting thing to observe because it's in some ways in contradiction to the Big Red Book, in my personal opinion. But if we have loving adults, loving parents and adults, we can sort that out. We can have an adult conversation at community level and see what happens. So the thing is that I forgave my mother in EMDR unplanned. It just happened. My kids were not happy about this, by the way. It's like, that's it? It's like, you forgave her? Now, again, these are three-year-olds, so they're not this way. But so I said, yeah. And they had all this contempt. And I said, well, okay, that's okay. You can still have contempt. And if you want to throw it her way, you can. Why would you do that? But if you want to do that, go ahead. It took about 3 or 4 months for it to go away. And I said to it, sweetheart, if you want to hold on to it. And I talk to my kids as if they're real. That's one of my next slides. Anyway, the point is that from an ACA perspective, the only amends that matters is to me. Other people I can take care of later. Because if I haven't made amends to me and I'm making amends to you, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm following instructions. I'm being a good recovery guy. But my kids are being abandoned in favor of you, I think. And it's very subtle, and I can't prove any of this. But when I made amends to me, and it took 3 amends to other people that mattered to me, I sobbed for 90 minutes. And I, in my mind, I walked around my house because I made amends for what happened to me. Because when my father was dead and I was screaming to him on the grave, you know, all kinds of stuff happening, and nobody's around and I'm in the graveyard, I wouldn't have cared anyway. It took me about 45 minutes to say what I wanted to say to him. And then I was just, and I forgave him. And we were leaving and my kids were really upset and I couldn't figure it out at first, but my kids actually said, "So, who's going to make amends to us?" I didn't have a really good answer at first. It's like the obvious is right in front of me, but it's like I'm still somewhat in a trance. I don't know. I shouldn't do that. It wasn't funny. So when I made amends to myself, it came organically, and I took my kid metaphorically, and I walked around the houses where the abuse occurred. And I was holding him, and I said, "Sweetheart, you remember what happened here?" And he's like got his head in my neck. He doesn't even want to look. "It wasn't your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't your fault." So how about Good Will Hunting? How many have seen that movie? You remember the scene? I watched it twice this week. I do that whether I need to or not. I can't stop crying when I watch that because the dynamic there. So it changed everything. Here's something I would recommend real quick. I have like 5 minutes or 10. I think I have 10. I hope I do. I think this may help, and I'll cover it real quick, and you can have the slides. If this is hard for you, because it was hard for me at first, but all of a sudden it just works, is here's an example of loving parent and her child. So here's the scenario. You're okay now. You're healed. You're whole. Your true self is on board. And you've got so much goodness going on that you actually want to give it away. And I hate saying you, so I'll say me. So I decide I'm going to adopt, on purpose, a traumatized child. I'm going to do that. And I say adopt because the way I work with minor children is they're here. I'm very visual. And so the cool thing is this child is traumatized, but he comes with a trauma map and a trauma signature. So I know exactly what is upset with him and his deal is, right? And it's a he for me. He's got food stuff. He's got money stuff. So I'm getting ready to parent because I know what's going on with him. And then something happens, and he's traumatized. I was going to say triggered. I hate that word. So he's traumatized. So as a loving parent, what I will do literally, and I didn't do this with my children, and I can't take it back, but I literally go to him, and I'll sit with him as long as it takes, and I'll eyeball to eyeball, "Sweetheart," I like put my hands on his face. "It's okay," and I start explaining trauma to him. "You've done nothing wrong. It's not your fault. I've been doing this for about 5 years. I do this every morning. Every morning, because every morning somebody's not okay." And thank God I don't associate it with what happened yesterday. That's the other thing that's very clear to me. My trauma lives. It lives whether I have a trigger in the day before or not. It's there. And my kids are sweet now because they trust it. They go, "I know it wasn't my fault. I shouldn't do this because it's not funny. It wasn't my fault. I know it's trauma. I know that feeling it will heal it. And I know that it'll pass. And then I'm okay. But I still hurt." It still hurts, right? And you just got to love them for that. So I take this very literally and have conversations, and I never tell them anything. I never declare anything. It's like, "Are you willing to talk to me, sweetheart?" And if he's not, I don't. Do you see?
Trust.
Yeah. And that's what my sponsor said. They all know. So now when I have, like, I make a mistake, my kids will go, "So what are you going to do about it, loving parent?" "It's on you, buddy." And they're not quite there, but they're pretty close. They don't react and start the messages like, "Oh, it's my fault." It's not. And they can see now the absurdity of it. And see, I might, because they were all lies, every message that I internalized when in the light of adult clarity, it was crazy. And yet that's how I live my life. I like this a lot. Here's the other one, and this is another cool thing. is you can't change your past. I think that's crazy. I can't change the events of my past, but I can certainly, now I'll use this new word that I learned from that slide, I can metabolize the feelings from my past. So what I did is I got on an airplane and I went back to my hometown and I recreated my childhood. Three houses. Took me a week. Took 100 pictures. Two of them had humans in it. The rest of them were places where I was traumatized. And here we were, real adult parent and child in hand. And there were people walking around. I could care less. I was talking to them. We walked to school. We went through town. Something happened to me when I was two, and it was my brother, and he either beat me up or he molested me, or both. I think he beat me up. And I was enraged as a child. So I wanted to get into that room, and I couldn't. It was an apartment now. But I recreated every one of those things, and when he got upset, I would get down on one knee, and I would talk to him. Because when we turned the corner to go to school, he was freaking out. I said, "Sweetheart, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay." And it sounds like little things, but it's not. Anyway, so I hope that's helpful. I don't need to do a lot of this. Children must be supervised by an adult at all times. That's the short version of that slide. All right, now here's caution adult material. I've already covered this, so I'll take it quickly. So there's a difference. This is really interesting. This came to me last week. So if I have a loving parent, there are two kinds of loving parent in my experience. One is a part-time conditional loving parent, but conditional doesn't mean what it did as children. Conditional as children is, I'm going to love you on these conditions. Conditional means here, there are conditions when it shows up, and this is Buddhist stuff. There are conditions that happen when it shows up, and when those conditions are gone, it doesn't show up. And there's nothing wrong here, but I just want to draw a distinction with, because this so there's a part-time loving, conditional loving parent, and the other one is a full-time unconditional loving parent. To me, that's the emotional sobriety of ACA. Because it can be measured. And if I can measure it, I can create it, and I can see where I stand. So what I say is, when trauma hits, a part-time conditional makes a call. And again, I'm not maligning these efforts. If I didn't make calls, didn't go to meetings, didn't work steps, I would have never gotten where I am. But it's at some point, making a call isn't necessarily an appropriate thing to do first. But if I don't have the capacity for that, then I go to a meeting and I do make that call. But when trauma hits a full-time parent, just parents, as long as it takes, whatever it takes. And I remember the first time I was parenting my kids and I said, you know, I probably should tell them, and again, they can hear me, so why am I doing this? I should probably tell them that I would never abandon them again, or I would never abandon them. And I remember I thought that. I can't say that. How do I know that? And I thought, they're hearing me. Yeah, I know they're hearing me. I struggle with this, and this is where, to me, a higher power comes in. It's like, I'm out of gas here, so help me. And so what happened is, I would start to say it, and then one day, I meant it. I said, I will never, ever abandon you. And what that means is, we will be together, God willing, to our last breath. And if we're lucky, that last breath will be a loving, conscious breath. Now, I got to be honest, I'm remembering, now we're talking mortality. Kids don't like mortality. So they got really nervous. Oh, we're going to die now. No. I mean, can you hear this, though? Because this is like real parent-child stuff. And when I was married a couple of times and had kids, the wives would hand me these books. And I already told you I don't read books. I'm pretty sure, because I haven't read the book, so I'm guessing, that, you know, Dr. Spock and all those guys, that the relationship of a loving parent and her child follows the same developmental path. Yeah? See, people have read the books. So it's not. This is not mystery. This is like regular stuff. But to us, this is like rocket science. Right? And that's what... So here's a biggie. Even turning it over to God in the long run may not be useful. I know this is a little radical, but it's no different than giving my power to you. Now, this is tricky because we're talking about God and we're talking about staple theory here. It's not even theory, practice. You turn it over. Turn it over. It's, anyway, I thought I'd throw that in because there are times when I've got a parent. Because if I take care of myself, God, meetings, steps, it's all good. And here, and I use this word unhealthy myself. This is out of Bill's letter. Emotional dependency is the very issue he was talking about. And God bless him. They're going to unpack his letter tomorrow. He had no concept. I shouldn't say this. I'm guessing. Because this is Bill W. we're talking about. I'm not sure he had a concept of self. I don't know. In his words, he says that, I want to love you. I want to love you. Here's my thing on love. If I love myself, I love you anyway. And you don't have to do anything. You can take it. You can not take it. Not only that, if I decide I want to give you some love, I got a lot to give. And if you don't want it, that's okay. Here it is. Here it comes. And I'm not being conscious about it. It's just the way it is. This is tricky. But this is very critical to my... So to me, when we grow up, when I grew up, I started to read this stuff. So words matter. And some of the concepts are fuzzy. And it's okay for me to speak out about what's clear to me. Otherwise, I'd still be doing the old stuff. So here we go. In closing, this is an act of courage. Straight up. I salute you because we could be, what is it, Saturday? We could be, you know, we could be doing a lot of other stuff. Pardon? On the ocean, yeah. Seriously, this is an act of courage. And I admire and respect your willingness to show up. Because we are worth it. The solution is to become an unloving parent. I've pretty much said it. I think I can't tell you how grateful I am. I remember when I first got sober, I had no idea where that would take me. And I had no idea... I fell in love with myself, seriously, and I treat myself that way. I like this. Olivia gave me this, and I wanted to use it, and I didn't think I'd have time to use it, but I kind of like it, because the other thing that I know is true is laughter is awesome, you know, real genuine laughter. And so if you can't read it, you know, this is my loving parent. And I have to be clear. This is a part-time, conditional loving parent because he's talking to his friend instead of taking care of the kid. But that's okay. And here's the kid freaking out, and here's the friend. And it says, is it my imagination or is your kid? And I like that because I use the word my kids. I think often we do that. On the verge of death. And it says, actually, she just noticed her shirt was scratchy tag on it. So yes. And I guess the thing I want to say in closing is I did a retreat. And I did a, you know, what did we, at the end of the meetings when we all, the unity prayer. I do that with my kids. And I did this morning. I had, you know, the little kid that was in the picture. I went on a retreat, and he was sitting across from me and wasn't looking at me. And I'm grateful because I have the ability now to really see him. And I've actually had experiences in EMDR where we're having eye contact. And usually my center is my adult. So when I'm parenting, it's almost always me looking at him. But I've had a couple of experiences where that flipped. And it flipped. And one of the things I'll close, which is not connected to what I'm saying, when I first held him and he let me hold him and he knew that we were on to a healing path, he just started to profoundly apologize. I'm sorry. Yeah. And he's, you know, I had big old ears as a kid, but still do, by the way. He was just so sweet. And my wish for you is that you make that level of connection with you. Because it's like nothing else. And I hope you have a great couple of days.